Ever since I was little, there are five things I've loved more than anything else. Fantasy, medieval history, science, kaijus, and superheroes. Well, as far as my special interests go, these have always been a massive interest of mine, and I'm doing something related to it. So today, we're going to combine two of these loves, science and superheroes, and talk about some of the most classic superhero powers and how they'd actually work, and what horrors of the human form we can cook up using them. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Waitat. We're back at it again, and I'm very excited for this episode. But before we get into that, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. It means the world to me that you're listening or watching. And for you to have my voice in your head while you're letting YouTube autoplay in your goon cave. And as you can see, we've added some decor to the update corner. Hopefully that makes this room feel a lot more homey for everyone, and will undoubtedly improve our audio quality. But we have all the normal updates. Make sure to share the show with your friends, like, comment, subscribe, and also make sure to check out Wind Kashika and Mystic Luna. You might catch me in Wind's chat and absolutely wearing some Mystic Luna swag. But with that, let's talk about some superpowers. Alright, so we're going to be talking about a trio of powers today, and we'll probably be back to this episode later. But before we say which ones, I do have a quick disclaimer. This shit is complicated. And I'm not going to pretend I understand it at all. It's the human body, which, as you should know, is a hell of a complex piece of equipment. So this is going to be a more vague discussion rather than in-depth examination of the exact science, measurements, and complicated realistic bits. Instead, we're going to be dabbling in science. But if you have a scientific background, or you're a science communicator that stumbled across this, feel free to go deeper on it, or make a response. Just, you know, make sure to give me credit and take it easy on me. My brain hasn't been fucked in a long time. Oh, and if you disagree with my conclusions, I mean, that's fair. This is silly and for fun. I'm more just starting a conversation about this. So, have fun and jump on in. Anyways, we're going to be talking about super strength, flight, and super speed today. So let's get into this with super strength first. Which means we first have to actually figure out what we're going for here. Because strength isn't just one thing. There's a lot to human strength. Grip strength, push, pull, muscle groups, isolated, and full body, explosive, or endurance. And measuring strength isn't simple either. There's a lot of methods to test strength, but there's two very common, widely used ones. That being MMT, or manual muscle testing, where someone subjectively ranks your ability to move your limb against gravity and resistance on a scale of 0 to 5. A 0 is no muscle contractions, and a 5 is expected, or normal strength. And this is mostly used for physical therapy. So, not really useful for our purposes here, but honestly, I also kind of feel like it's a bit limited and its effectiveness, especially for very, very strong people. Like, if your normal is lifting half a ton and you're able to lift a 50-pound weight during physical therapy, maybe that's not a 5 for you. Although I'm sure, you know, physical therapists actually know their patient well enough to know that that's not a 5 for them. But anyways, the other method is the one repetition maximum test. This is how much you can lift at once in a single rep. And this is used pretty commonly for weightlifters and powerlifters, so a lot more useful for our purposes. But we can't just use one muscle group and call it good. So instead, we're going to use a few different muscle groups across the body. So let's familiarize ourselves with the exercises we'll be measuring, because you're watching this, I'm assuming you're a bit of a fucking nerd. Bench press, also called chest press, is an exercise where you lift the barbell upwards while lying on a weight bench. This mostly works at the chest, shoulders, and upper arms. Squat press is an exercise where you squat at the knee with a weight with a barbell on your shoulders, which works out your quads, glutes, hammies, shoulders, and core. Deadlift is where you lift the barbell off the ground to the hips and then set it back down again. Sometimes the bar is instead dropped. Deadlifts are kind of like a mix between bench press and squat press, working out your glutes, hamstrings, lower back, quads, core, and forearms. Shoulder presses are done with a barbell or dumbbells, where you start in a flexing pose and lift your arms up to full length and back down, which works your shoulders and delts. Pull-ups are pulling yourself off the ground with a bar, either to shoulder or the chin, which works your lats and biceps. Dumbbell curls are beginning with dumbbells resting by either side and then lifting up to your chest or folding your arms all the way up, which is focused mostly on the bicep, obviously. Push-ups are where you start in plank position and bring yourself low to the ground and back up, which does your chest, shoulders, and triceps. Leg presses, besides being the scariest fucking machine, and you know why, you little psycho, is pushing a weight plate diagonally upwards with your legs, which works out basically your entire leg. And finally is the cable crunch, which is a core exercise where you grip the rope on a pulley machine and pull it down from an arch position to a kneeling position, which is mostly for the hips, abdominal muscles, and obliques. But we're also going to be using grip strength and punch strength, since we are talking about, you know, superpowers that's usually used by superheroes. And since the human body is very complicated and complex machine, we're not going to go into incredibly deep detail about muscle and strength potential and go too deep into the minutiae. Instead, we're going to be doing an increase in proportional strength, just straight up. So we first need to know how strong an untrained person is, so we know the baseline we're going to be increasing. An untrained person can, on average, bench 100 pounds, squat 103, and deadlift 128.5. They can also do 11-pound dumbbell curls, 141-pound leg presses, and 33-pound cable crunches, have a grip strength of 86 pounds, and a punch force of 300 pounds. And an untrained person can also do one pull-up or push-up. Before you laugh, I really want you to think about that. When was the last time you did a single pull-up or push-up? So I can tell you, it's been a long time for me. Also, this is averaged across gender. Basically, for most workouts, there's different standards for what's normal untrained for different genders, but this is just averaged across them. But anyways, let's figure out our untrained superhuman. And for that, we're going to need a record to compare to. So let's go with the deadlift record, which is Eddie Hall's 1,102.3-pound deadlift. For context, that is deadlifting a fucking grand piano, a golf cart, or particularly large male reindeer, which I think is the funniest one to lift. If Eddie Hall had to pull a golf cart out of a ditch, you could give him a barbell and tie the cart to it, and he could probably just lift it out. And Eddie Hall will serve as our untrained low-level super strength. Basically, this is the minimum bar you have to hit without training to be considered super strong, which is 860% higher than an untrained person's deadlift, which, if we're doing proportional increases, gives us the following. A bench press of 860 pounds, a squat of 885.8, and of course our 1,100-pound deadlift. Our 94.6-pound dumbbell curl, 1,200-pound leg press, 283.8 cable crunch, grippers with a grip of 739.6 pounds, and a punch force of 2,580 pounds of force. And they can do a grand total of 8 pull-ups or push-ups. And again, before you laugh or think that's unimpressive, keep in mind that if they were Eddie Hall's weight, they'd be lifting 360 pounds either off the ground or into the air with basically just their arms. But without context, these numbers don't mean anything. Well, for context, if you could bench that much, you would lift almost an entire grizzly bear. If a grizzly bear was on top of you, hey, I don't like you like that, but if a grizzly bear was on top of you, you could lift it off. You could also leg press a saltwater crocodile, punch almost twice as hard as Mike Tyson at his peak, and you could crack a person's rib in your bare hand. All of this, remember, without any training. This is the first time you walk into a gym, you sit on the bench, and you throw up a world record. With training, well, an elite level athlete is on average 320% stronger than when they started. Which means your bench and squat goes up to 2,800 pounds and your deadlift goes to 3,500. You can also dumbbell curl 303 pounds, leg press 3,380, cable crunch 900 pounds, grip 2,366 pounds, and punch with a force of 8,256 pounds of force. And of course, your maximum pull-ups and push-ups is 25. Same shit, different day, boys. That's impressive. Now, what can you do with that? Well, for one, easily break a femur by gripping it. You can punch nails into wood. You could bench press a Toyota Corolla or leg press an SUV. And again, this is the weak form of super strength. But okay, how could this happen and what causes humans to be strong in the first place? Well, the number one thing that causes humans to be strong is muscle mass. Wild, I know, only brave takes on weight at. But in how we normally think of strength, that would be the skeletal muscles, the ones attached to your skeleton bones with tendons. And generally speaking, the higher density and more muscles you have, the stronger you are. Now, there's actually different kinds of muscles associated with different activities. Fast twitch and slow twitch muscle fibers. Slow twitch, also called type 1 muscles, gives us endurance strength and allows us to maintain sustained muscle contractions. They receive a lot of oxygen and blood to keep down the buildup of lactic acid and keep feeding your muscles ATP. And ATP is the thing that carries energy through your body. Meanwhile, type 2 or fast twitch fibers are designed for rapid and powerful muscle contractions. They have higher ATP but lower blood and oxygen supply, meaning they can give you a burst of strength, but they lose that power really fast. The second biggest thing that contributes to human strength is actually your nervous system, with something called neural activation heavily affecting your total strength, since it's a measurement of how effectively your nerves can activate and coordinate muscles, which can be aided by training, use, and exercise. With training, experience, and stronger neural pathways, you're able to use a more precise number of muscle fibers depending on the intensity of what you're trying to do. Which is one of the reasons why you start to find lifting the same thing over and over again easier, even if you aren't gaining muscle mass. As the same thing with the firing rate of your muscles, since your muscles need continuous neural impulses to stay flexed, which is actually a big reason why you fatigue. Sometimes your muscles are capable of staying flexed, but your brain can't send signals fast enough to keep up the constant flexing. Now, also about half of your strength potential comes from your genetics, not to mention your hormone levels and muscle fiber distribution, which is less of a factor for this hypothetical, but still. And finally, there's factors we won't be talking about this episode, like age, nutrition, and overall health. I mean, because for the grip strength, we're assuming it's someone in their mid-20s or 30s. So with that, what would you need to have super strength? Well, first and easiest, you need a higher amount and much denser muscle mass. If you have to choose between them, pick denser, but both is going to help you a whole lot. Muscle layout doesn't matter nearly as much, like, we're not talking about having cat muscles, but you will have wildly denser muscle mass than a normal person. You'd also have a high firing rate for your neural connections and very well-developed neuromuscular connections. And finally, you'd have to have an insane cocktail of higher hormones in your body. You have to have high levels of testosterone, human growth hormones, and IGF-1 because all three help with muscle strength. You also have high rates of epinephrine and norepinephrine compared to most people, since they aid in your muscles' function. And you'd also probably have higher concentration of various thyroid hormones to help with muscle growth and performance. And finally, unlike what all those gym bros will tell you, elevated levels of estrogen. Because estrogen helps to preserve both mass and strength long term. Now, you'd be right to assume that these things wouldn't be the only things that need to change. Again, people are complicated machines. So, firstly, you would absolutely need stronger tendons and cartilage. Because it's already possible, when accessing the full strength of human muscle, to rip the tendons connecting your muscles to bone and needing medical intervention. Having a lot higher strength without training would necessitate having stronger tendons to support them and having stronger cartilage at the joints so that the moment they're suddenly under 1,000 pounds of additional pressure, they don't snap like a Kit Kat bar. Your bones would also need to be denser and larger, because how your muscles work is using the leverage of your bone to contract against. So you need more surface area for more and stronger connection points, and also, because we're dealing with levels of strength that snap people's fucking femurs by gripping them, your own bones need to be able to handle intensely powerful muscle contractions. As a consequence, you'd also have more bone marrow, meaning you're producing more red blood cells. Your heart would also need to be larger and have a higher red blood count. Since your heart needs both the power and size to support your muscle mass, you'd need a pumping hard core. This would also probably spike your blood pressure, so you'll need some heavy-duty veins and arteries. And since you'd need to feed all of these muscles, your blood would be capable of carrying more nutrients to more efficiently feed them and properly oxygenate them. And your metabolism would be through the fucking roof. You'd be doing, like, the Rock's diet of a whole rotisserie chicken per meal. And, you know, for best effect, eat nutrient-dense foods. Don't just, like, be shoveling, like, popcorn. Especially ones high in iron, you're definitely going to need it for all the blood you're going to be producing. Oh, and also to deal with the pressure and to not fucking split from just you flexing or just interacting with things that heavy, your skin also needs to be thicker, denser, and tougher. And if all of this sounds intense, it's because it is. This kind of power and strength is really stretching what human biology is capable of. And as you'd expect, there's consequences of this. Probably the one you wouldn't think of if you don't have massive boobs, a big gut, or impressive muscles, is how bad your fucking spine would be. And your joints. It doesn't matter how strong you are, the strain of having high weight or weirdly distributed weight will damage and put a lot of pressure and wear on your joints and spine. So you are going to have back pain. A lot of it. Speaking of strain, your heart, despite being bigger and stronger, it will still be under massive strain. Keep in mind, it being bigger and stronger is the bare minimum to not pass the fuck out every 15 minutes or every time you try to carry in all the groceries at once. Because weight, regardless of where it's from, is very hard on your heart. Especially weight that requires excellent blood flow. So, if not for your spine and ankles, you're going to need medical intervention for your heart at some point in your life. Medical intervention that is going to be very hard for doctors to do, since if they need to do surgery, they're cutting through skin, muscle, and bone that can yeet a small car. Now, you're also going to be astronomically heavy, given that the people on the low end of super strength for our purposes are people like Eddie Hall and Brian Shaw, who weigh 360 and 430 pounds respectively, and they don't even have all the adaptations that you'd have to make you heavier. We're basically looking at someone that's pushing 500 pounds. Untrained of muscle. Now, what this means is that you're going to have a hard time finding furniture, chairs, and vehicles to accommodate you. You're also going to have a hard time finding any kind of roller coaster, not advisable with your heart. Touristy things, boats, or hell, even stairs that would be willing to accommodate you. Not to mention that you're probably tall and broad, too, so good luck finding clothes, fitting through doors, onto an airplane, on a toilet, or behind a desk. And if you think you can escape into the water, you're wrong. Because it might be physically impossible to swim. And even if you could, you'd have a very hard time of it. But that's not even the end of it, because remember those hormones? Testosterone, while it would make you stronger, increase your bone density, and increase your blood count, has other effects. Some aren't that harmful, like reducing your abdominal fat, deepening your voice, making you hairy, and increasing your sex drive. But others cause you issues, like irritability, aggression, moodiness, increased risk-taking, acne, blood clots, and if you're a woman, PCOS. Having a high amount of growth hormone can exacerbate your joint and muscle pain, cause your boobs to grow, even as a man, carpal tunnel and swelling, and increase your risk of cancer, depression, and diabetes. IGF-1, while being key in growth, also affects fat burning and is important for female reproduction. Take that as you will, but that means you need to eat a lot more again. On the good side, it can increase your memory and synaptic plasticity, meaning you learn better. Unfortunately, it also can accelerate neurodegenerative diseases, depression, and anxiety. Epinephrine can spike your blood pressure, blood sugar, and anxiety, while norepinephrine, while enhancing memory, can make you more anxious, restless, and depressed, constipated, and also hurt your sleep patterns. You'll be at risk for hyperthyroidism, which could massively increase your metabolism, make your heartbeat irregular, cause anxiety and irritability, tremors, make concentration difficult, and increase heat sensitivity. Oh, and also make you infertile. And high estrogen can cause weight gain, fatigue, memory problems, mood swings, irregular menstruation, erectile dysfunction, infertility, and you guessed it, anxiety and depression. So where does all that leave you? Well, heavily medicated and or deeply unwell. Because your heart is fucked and will probably need medication, your joints and spine will be in a lot of pain, so you'll probably need some kind of pain meds or physical therapy or both. Also, you're going to need some therapy or pills to deal with your depression, anxiety, mood swings, and aggression. Again, hopefully both. And you also might need help for other stuff like mental fog, infertility if you really want kids, blood pressure, constipation, diabetes, and sleep issues. Assuming you're absolutely perfect about your health, at least. If not, you're going to raw dog mental and physical illnesses that put people in the ground consistently. But, you know, you're also taking more meds than what's in my tum-tum after being left unattended in grandma's medicine cabinet, so... But, okay, with that, we're moving on to the next superpower. Flight. Now, while there's less to particularly cover here in the beginning, there's a few things we need to talk about. Firstly, what kind of flight is it? Is it some kind of kinesis or self-telekinesis? Then we really don't have anything to talk about. But if it's biological flight, now we're talking. So let's discuss wings. Now, while I can't find the formula for calculating human weight and height into a wingspan, this formula does exist. It's just in a study about bird wingspan that I, as a humanities degree holder, cannot parse for the fucking life of me. But according to the formula in that study, assuming a small human of about 5 feet tall and 155 pounds, you'd need a 20-foot wingspan. Which, considering for weight, isn't really that bad. Also, we're not doing hollow bones. Because, upon looking into it, bones don't actually account for most of the weight of an average person, coming out to about 10% of our body weight, with most of the rest being from fluids and muscle in our body in various forms. So, not really worth it. Regardless, your anatomy would need to be rearranged. Like, a lot. The first thing we need to figure out is angel or bat wings. Because we're going for bat wings, then the biggest change is that your arms are now 10 feet long. Which, hey, if you're imagining that dude, you'd be correct. This is a Mandela catalog motherfucker. Well, if you have angel wings, you need a second pair of shoulder blades specifically for your wings. Which makes for a really fucked up looking skeleton. But regardless, in either case, you need to be able to produce a lot of power and upward force with those wings. So let's look at our closest analogs for this. Birds and bats. About 16 to 30% of their total muscle mass is around their flight muscles, which means you have about 16 to 30% of the muscles in your body around your chest and back. Which, surprisingly, is kind of in line. since about 20% of your muscle mass is already in your chest, assuming you're the average human. But for the sake of the argument, let's bump that up to 30%, which does mean the rest of your body will either have 10% less muscle, or you're just fucking buff as hell. And here's the other thing. Due to our size and large wingspan, humans would not be one of the species with acrobatic wings, since our wingspan would mostly be about getting into the air rather than being particularly acrobatic. We're not going to be doing dogfighting flight. We're doing soaring flight, like geese and vultures. Still cool, but less so. But hold on, fucko. We're not done yet. Because there's a lot of stuff we need to account for. In particular, that the air is, surprise, surprise, an extreme climate. Meaning we need to adapt to it. So, what's being high in the air like? Well, beginning with the most obvious, the air is extremely thin, which, given that you need a lot of oxygen in your muscles, can't be an issue. But you know what else needs oxygen? You do. Your brain needs oxygen. And when it's not getting enough, you get fatigue and headaches and breathing issues. Oh, you know, and also, like, you can just pass out and suddenly you're plummeting through the skies. There's also air pressure. High in the air pressure reduces by a lot, which can cause joint pain and swelling, dizziness, trouble balancing, nausea, and increased blood pressure. It also put a lot of pressure on your eyeballs, which is a very pleasant thing to think about, since temperature fluctuates very heavily in high altitudes, because it's extremely fucking cold. But depending on ground reflection, high elevation ground, and also sun exposure, because it's less scattered the higher up you go, temperature can spike pretty significantly. And finally, we have storms and wind. Because when you're that high up, wind doesn't really have anything stopping it from gaining more momentum. Meaning something can just whip the wind up, and suddenly you're getting ass blasted by the wind gods. So, how does your body adapt to all of this? Well, firstly, you'd probably develop a nictitating membrane to keep your eyes moist, a consistent temperature and pressure, and free debris while flying. Also, this can help the sun from burning your fucking retinas while you're flying above the clouds, assuming you don't look directly at it, which is going to be hard to do while you're flying horizontally anyways. And this could happen kind of easily, since humans have a vestigial one that doesn't work anymore and is too small. But onto the bigger adaptations. Firstly, your blood cells would need higher oxygen uptake and an ability to carry more. Your lungs would also need to be more efficient and have an emergency oxygen supply. What exactly would that be? I don't fucking know. Do I look like a lung scientist? I mean, one option is to have the one-way airflow and an air sac attached to your lungs like birds. One-way airflow basically means there's an in-pipe and an out-pipe for air, so you can just be constantly breathing in one way and out the other. Probably out the butthole, but it could also be another pipe, like a windpipe in your throat. But humans are also adaptable, so if you kept your height relatively low, then you'd probably be fine. But what if you wanted to fly high? Well, a lot of it is the human body getting used to it. Like, the dizziness is caused by fluid in your ear being under lower pressure. And your body will figure out how to handle that. Same with the nausea. Same with the high blood pressure. Your heart rate may increase and the pressure from muscles in your body might go up to counteract the lack of air pushing inwards on your veins. But it's your body mostly getting used to it. And we've already seen in people that live at high altitudes, their joints have higher rates of enzymes that prevent low pressure related swelling. Although your joints will probably be swollen still. You're also probably going to run hot and have thick skin, or you're going to develop fur or feathers to protect your skin from debris, wind, and temperature, which I feel like that's not that bad of a trade-off. But, yeah, all of those are actually surprisingly feasible. Just maybe a little bit more extreme than humans are used to, but you'd be a lot more comfortable at high altitudes and you'd have to deal with these massive goddamn wings, but you're actually fine. That's the wild thing about human bodies, by the way. This is feasible because humans are incredibly adaptive creatures. And this is all biological. If you really wanted to fly higher than that, put on a pressure suit, wear an oxygen mask and some sunglasses, and take your vertigo pills and go for it. Still, might want to live in the mountains, but hey, fair is fair. So let's go to our last one, super speed. So for this one, like with super strength, we need to figure out what we're looking for here. Well, let's go with some combination of movement speed and reaction time. So let's look at some untrained averages. For an untrained person, they should be able to walk consistently at around 3 miles an hour, jog at 4.5, and sprint at 11. And you should be able to visually react to something within 0.25 seconds and audibly react to something within 0.17 seconds. And here's the thing. Like super strength, this is also very complicated, so we're going to do a proportional increase again. Using the fastest human in the world for a super strength baseline, Usain Bolt, who will gatekeep our lower end of our super speed at 27 miles per hour sprint, which is 41% faster in all regards, which means that your comfortable walk is 4 miles an hour, which isn't that big of a change, jogging is at 6.3, and sprinting at 27. Now, while this doesn't seem impressive yet, keep in mind these are just completely untrained. This is the equivalent of a normal person, not one of us, just running down the road. If that still isn't impressive, just watch Usain Bolt run. Now for the reaction times, we see something way more impressive. Your visual reaction time is 0.1025, and your auditory reaction time is 0.07 seconds. Which visually is the low end of websites loading and an instantaneous interface, and on the auditory side, you'd be able to react to a frog's tongue shooting out, assuming you could hear it first. Meaning you'd be an excellent audio engineer and be exceptionally annoyed at basically all UIs because your brain would have time to detect the latency. But if you trained yourself to the elite level with this being your baseline, it would be 44% higher than your untrained levels, which puts your walking speed at 6 miles per hour comfortably, a 9 mile an hour jog, and a fucking 39 mile per hour sprint, which is absolutely insane. A sprinter, on average, can maintain a 10 second sprint, which means a person with no equipment moves 572 feet in that time. Or for those of you of the metric persuasion, 174.3 meters. Do you know how fucking far away that is? That is as long as St. Paul's Cathedral is tall, or half the Eiffel Tower, two of the Statues of Liberty, one-tenth the length of my cock. And again, this is the minimum trained super speed. But, okay, reaction times. Your visual reaction time becomes 0.045 seconds, which means if someone shot a 308 at you from 500 yards, you could see and possibly dodge the bullet. But you would definitely hear it first, with an auditory reaction time of 0.031 seconds. Which again, sounds like you'd have a hard time doing a whole lot. Using our example from earlier, you'd not only see the websites loading, but it would take a few moments for something others see as instant to happen for you. Google loading a web page would be immensely slow to you. But okay, what would cause all of this? Well, the biggest cause would be your genetics. Your genetics provide most of what contributes to your maximum speed, particularly your muscle layout. Speaking of which, that's also a massive contributor. Because like we just talked about earlier, having more fast-twitch muscle fibers will increase your speed, while having more slow-twitch will increase how long you can maintain that speed. Now, the third biggest contributor is going to be your body composition. The more lean, the faster you can be. And there's also different good muscle to fat ratios for different kinds of running. Distance runners tend to be more lean, but sprinters tend to have a lot more muscle, and oftentimes a bit more fat. So having the optimal combination of muscle and fat can both reduce the weight you need to move and give you the right amount of energy. Neuromuscular speed is also going to be a big factor, which is the speed that your nervous system sends signals to tell your muscles to move and contract. Your stride length, i.e. the distance your legs cover, and the stride frequency, i.e. how many strides you take in a period of time, is basically the mechanical part of high running speed. And finally, your initial acceleration will also pretty heavily affect your speed. Because it doesn't matter how much you can build up or maintain it if your initial speed is garbage, especially if it's only 10 seconds. And the speed goes up if you can recruit a lot of fast switch muscles to extremely quickly unload a fuck ton of power. But here's the thing with all these modifications. Really, here's what would be different about you. Your body fat percentage would probably hover around 10%. Leaner than that if you're particularly explosive. You're also going to have longer legs and stronger leg muscles, which also probably means you're going to be distinctly taller. But why are the numbers for this one so much lower than the numbers for super strength? Well, it's because, unfortunately for our super speed dreams, there's a lot of biological limiters. For humans in particular, we're not built for speed or explosive power. We're built for distance. Humans can train and condition to run at a moderate pace for long periods of time. That's what we're designed for. So getting a whole lot faster would require a whole lot of energy we don't tend to have available. And packing on that energy would add too much weight to increase their speed. So our bodies just can't do it. And on top of that, vertebrates have a maximum muscle speed overall, a maximum of 250 movements per second, which is about as fast as an insect's wings beating. For the human body, the fastest is 100 movements per second, and that's the movement of the eye and eyelids. But for voluntary movement, it maxes out at 20 to 25 movements per second and can briefly jump up to 100 per second on a reflex. And all this means that the fastest human muscle could ever move is about 40 miles an hour. And if you were to modify the human body enough to move a lot faster than that, you wouldn't really have something that looks human anymore. You could push it, though, with some of the same modifications you'd have with super strength, but to a lesser degree, like thicker bones and muscles, especially in the legs, with a lot of fast-switch fibers to explicitly accelerate. But at the lowest ends, you don't particularly need them. But this also brings up the horror of having that fast of a reaction time. Your eyelids, having 100 movements per second, can close in 0.01 seconds. But the fastest you could possibly move your body at is 0.07 seconds. Meaning at the high end, you can react to and consciously see something happening or come towards you, but be unable to move your body fast enough to respond, which is just absolute hell. Of course, anything not moving faster than that, you'd be able to pretty effortlessly dodge. But this does also include your fucking eyes. But yeah, there we go. Our superpowers for this time around. So what have we learned here today? Well, the human body is an absolute fucking horror show, and superpowers are best left to comic books and fantasy. Because look, it's fun to look at these things scientifically and how fucking bonkers they would be in real life. But truthfully, we shouldn't be measuring comics for this metric. If you're making realistic superhumans, absolutely. But that's not what we did today. Today, I tell you about human anatomy, exercise, and biomechanics, and you didn't even notice until I just told you. But anyways, thank you for listening. If you have opinions, improvements, corrections, and anything else you'd like to talk about, comment below or email me at waytappods@gmail.com. And remember to like, share, and subscribe for more. And follow my podcast feed for audio versions, and come back next time where I defend wearing leather chaps and a gift mask to battle. Have a good night. Have a good night. Don't murder. Have fun. And remember... Wait, do you think people with super strength have gorilla grip in their... Never mind. This has been Why Are You Talking About This? I've been your host, William. Good night.